Traditionally, there had been a four-part test for whether or not speech was protected. First, did the employee suffer an adverse employment action, a discharge, failure to promote, denial of a promotion, etc.? Second, did the employee speak on a matter of public concern? Speech concerning pure employment gripes normally will not be protected. It has to involve a matter of public concern. Third, did the employee interest in speech outweigh the employer's interest in governmental efficiency? If there's a strong public component to the employee's speech, its interest goes up. If the government has serious concerns about disruption of the workplace, that might affect the balancing too. And finally, was the adverse action substantially motivated by the employee's speech? Now, Garcetti, that added element, did the employee speak pursuant to official job duties? Under Garcetti, if the answer to that question is yes, even if the topic is on a matter of public concern, the speech is not protected. Now, Lane v. Franks did clarify that because there was a lot of, you know, fudging on that. But Lane v. Franks clarified that the speech connected to the job can still be protected if it is not speech required by the job. But as I mentioned, courts are blurring this line very often, especially in cases involving whistleblowers reporting internally. Now, an important question, is it speech at all? This was a very interesting case, Heffernan versus City of Patterson, out of the Supreme Court. The facts were that a police officer who was known to be friends with the mayor's political opponent was seen picking up a yard sign. Now, he was picking it up for his mother, but the chief mistakenly assumed that the officer was openly supporting the mayor's opponent, so fired him. Well, the officer brought a claim, and the court said, yes, the plaintiff could state a claim in those facts, although he had not actually engaged in any speech whatsoever. The court focused not on his actual actions, but on the defendant's belief about those actions. What motivated the adverse action? If the motivation is the desire to prohibit protected speech, then the plaintiff can state a claim. So then in the Fifth Circuit, we have Smith v. Madison, which was just an application of the rule. In this case, the mayor recommended an office administrator's discharge based on the mistaken belief that she was actively campaigning for his political rival. She was not, but he thought she was. A straightforward application of Heffernan, First Amendment violation, but the court found that qualified immunity protected the mayor because his actions occurred before the Heffernan decision was handed down. So again, there you see qualified immunity. If there's not a case on all fours at the time the conduct occurred, then the defendant official is going to be protected even if there is a constitutional violation. This case had an interesting wrinkle, though. The city was held liable because the council, which actually did the firing, had rubber-stamped the mayor's recommendation. The court used the cat's paw theory that you sometimes see in discrimination cases to charge the council with the mayor's unlawful intent, and because qualified immunity was not available to the city, the plaintiff could state a cause of action against the city, but not the mayor. This is a case, Amawi versus Pflugerville ISD, that I mentioned last year, but we have an update. The facts were that the Texas legislature, in its wisdom, passed a statute that prohibited the state and local governmental entities from entering into contracts with persons that refused to sign a pledge agreeing not to participate in a boycott of Israel. Now, Amawi was a speech pathologist and the Pflugerville ISD declined to renew her contract after she refused to sign the pledge. So this seemingly is an easy case after Janice, right? This is compelled speech or action. Amawi did not agree politically with the view she was required to endorse. Here, the court did, in fact, side with Amawi and held her First Amendment rights were violated. The court stated that the required pledge was an ideological or political message the First Amendment prevents Texas from compelling. However, after the court's ruling and after I reported last year, the Texas Attorney General of all people and the school district appealed to the Fifth Circuit. However, apparently the Texas Attorney General, who's so concerned about the rights of employees that their views not be coerced by unions, is less so with regards to Amawi and this pledge to Israel. However, the Texas legislature then amended the law so that it no longer applies to sole proprietors. The Fifth Circuit then declared the case moot. So we'll have to wait for another day to test the whole pledge not to boycott Israel. Corn versus Mississippi Department of Public Safety. I think this is an important case. The plaintiff and office director, also the governor's representative on a task force, reported officers writing ghost tickets to garner undeserved overtime under the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration grant. The plaintiff reported to his superiors, then to the governor, then to NHTSA itself. NHTSA, learning about the cheating, canceled the grant. The plaintiff was fired. The court held, though, that this was not citizen speech. Under Garcetti, reports up the chain of command, it felt, while performing job duties were not protected. What about the internal report to NHTSA, though? Well, they said that also was not protected because it was simply a continuation of earlier chain of command reports. So even a report to an outside agency bounced under Garcetti, and to me, this is a pretty disturbing application of Garcetti for obvious reasons.